Hey, everybody, welcome to the Designated Survivor After Show. We're going to be breaking down episode 2, The First Day. Find out what happens when Kiefer Sutherland, we mix that with Michael Klaus eating 3 bags of popcorn. It's going to be exciting. Let's find out.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Yes.
There are more survivors, and we are... Whoa!
Look at this. We're breaking it down here on that Designated Survivor After Show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to AfterBuzz TV's Designated Survivor After Show. We're breaking down the entire season of Designated Survivor. Second episode just aired on ABC this evening. We're breaking it all down. We got most of the panel united here tonight. I'm one of your hosts, Frank Moran. You can follow me on Twitter at HappyGoJackie.
Michael Klaus. You can follow me on Instagram at MichaelKlausTV, on Instagram at TheOnlyMC, on Twitter at MichaelKlausTV. They all blend together.
Hey guys, I'm Renee Ariel, and you can follow me on Instagram and on Twitter at Renee Ariel. And check out my blog, Cat's Lipstick LA. I just posted a new article, How to Survive Someone Not Liking You.
Oh my. Man, always these great topics. I got to check it out. Everybody, please read that blog.
Please.
Yes, yes. Now, always, folks, you can like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe to the YouTube channel, hop on the chat. Right now, you see the swanky, cool iPad set up there that Michael Klaus has.
Yeah.
My goodness, right there. He's got the chat running
we
right
got
there.
The chat. We got several people talking. One of the biggest things they're talking about is the congresswoman. They think she's dirty. They think she's trying to take over.
Oh, man.
I don't know about that.
Well, I guess we'll get into that in a second. But, as always, resident statistician for the Designated Survivor After Show, Michael Klaus has got some hot viewing numbers.
Got some info that I was reading up on this week that this show actually had the biggest gain for viewers post premiere. So the people who DVR'd it, who watched it then in the day or two following, it actually had a total of 15.28 million viewers total. And
whoa,
about 5 million of those were people who watched it in the day or two afterwards. It's the biggest jump for any show in the first week for the 2016-27 season. So a lot of people tuning in. Obviously, a Kiefer Sutherland, a big draw. I'm sure that people wanted to see what his next 24 type role would be.
You sure it's not those Leo fans? They're really getting enticed by that presidential
that
sun storyline.
Thankfully, see that sun? Tune in.
Thankfully, this episode did not have much Leo action.
But what little
it's still
they
too
had
much.
Was yeah. As we get to that point in my notes, I wrote 86 this storyline. Please.
Yeah, so my favorite part was when he walked out of the room. Good time.
Sadly, he came back. And it was a shame. But we'll break down the episode starting at the beginning there. We start in the ruins of the Capitol building, basically kind of where the last episode left off there. And Hannah Wells is talking to Deputy Director Atwood there, kind of trying to fill her in on what her suspicions are about what's happened.
That is the consistent theme kind of throughout is she obviously believes it's not Sakaar. He believes it is. I don't think anyone actually does believe it's Sakaar. I mean, you don't think it's Sakaar. I think that's really what they're trying to throw out there is that, it's 75%. And
yeah,
everyone's like,
it's not.
No way.
Now, I feel like that would be too easy. And it feels like this dud that they found. I think the reason that it has so many different components from so many different countries is the idea that it wants to make it as hard as possible to identify a single source. We can prolong that investigation forever. It's easy to hide if you just throw in a bunch of different components from different countries.
My question is, are they trying to make the lead FBI guy seem bad? Because in cases where they're looking at who to trust and who to not trust. So obviously, we are trying to get Hannah Watts, Maggie Q. We're trying to trust Hannah. That's the theme it's like we want her to view her as a good person. She is, sorting through the facts and everything and realizing that it's not Sakaar, that it's probably someone else. We're wanting to view her as a good person. Are we wanting to view the main guy as a bad guy that he keeps forcing maybe this issue?
Not like the general. No. I honestly think he's just trying to do his job. Not the general. The other guy. What is his name? Is it Jason Atwood? Is that
yes.
guy?
Yes.
Yeah, Jason Atwood. I think he's honestly trying to do his job. I think they want an enemy. They want it right away. They want answers. They don't have them. There's all of these like little puzzle pieces. They're like, well, it's probably this person. 75% chance it's this person. They don't have another lead. So they want to go to that because that's the easiest way to, the easiest and quickest solution for them. But I'm confused because this terrorist isn't just framing like one group. They're trying to make it very difficult to figure it out. Why not just frame one terrorist group? And then, so then they get away with it. They obviously have like a bigger plan. I think it's so weird that they're throwing in all of these other components to throw them off instead of just framing someone else.
Yeah, a bomb that was found in Afghanistan that could be used by the Russians, but had a Pakistani trigger, Iranian parts. A lot of bad names in that group.
No, that's true. I mean, I think any situation like this, any kind of major public catastrophe or event that happens like that, people are quick to rush to judgment, want to assign blame. You've got public pressure. You've got pressure from within the government, and there's not even that much of a government left. Yeah. But you're having pressure from all sources for people to try to just get an answer as quickly as possible. And that forces or makes people want to just do the easy thing, where I'll just blame somebody that looks like that low-hanging fruit. You're just going to grab that.
Side note, I wonder when they're writing something like this, how careful they are of countries that they throw in. Obviously, anyone who, your first thought when you hear Pakistan, Iran, not good. But I wonder how much the writers of this show are thinking, like, okay, how much do we bring Russia into this? Can we, you know, we don't want to, you know, really make it so that everyone in the U.S. hates Russia, but you're kind of incorporating Russia in with Iran and Pakistan, which is not a good group to be in. This is something that I'm thinking about off the top of my head.
Not true, but I feel like you want to make it as true to life as possible. And I mean, those are just potential candidates. If something were to happen, at least they would be in the topic of the conversation. Mm-hmm. There.
Yeah.
I can understand that. Now we have Aaron, good old, well, he's not quite, he's vying Aaron, for his chief of staff. We'll see what happens.
Yeah,
but it's like a teacher's pet.
We get him hanging out with Tom because Tom is just getting up, getting dressed, ready to go back into the West Wing. And you can see the news reports from his speech the night before. Did not go over very well.
I found it was an interesting dynamic right off the bat where it seemed to end last week with more positive and we were, you know, feeling confident. And then this week it starts out on a low again.
Yeah. I mean, we see him walking through the White House, the West Wing and stuff, and you just see some of the other staffers there are just really just freaking out, panicking, not sure what to do. They don't feel very reassured at all. They're not sure about Tom. Yeah, they realize, what do we do? Our boss could be dead.
The walk of worry.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing that would make sense, I think, at this point in the show. I would be concerned if that wasn't the case right now, if people weren't worried and confused and, like, questioning if this guy should be president, because it all happened so fast. I mean, this happened yesterday. Like, the world, the country just flipped around. Like, that's insane. So I get where they're coming from. I do love, though, when he was doing the speech in the beginning and they're getting all of the different reviews. It just felt like those terrible YouTube comments that you get, like, under videos, but just, like, over and over and over again from different news sources. It was rough.
It was. I mean, I guess, you know, as we've been talking about last week, I mean, what he has going against him is that he's only an academic. So he has no real government experience at all. So I feel like that's what everybody's just going to use as an easy way to just blame him and kind of bring him down a little bit. But Aaron says, hey, guess what? You're going to go to the Oval Office. We're going to have a little briefing for you. It's going to be pretty much a little crazier than anything you've been used to.
Oh, I'm good.
Certainly it is. I mean, everybody's in there trying to just yell out their opinions, get the president's attention, telling him what he needs to do.
Did you guys like that scene? I didn't like it.
Yeah, it was whatever.
It was too fake.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, I agree with
you. Tell me you wouldn't, your president is trying to yell and nobody is listening.
And then they don't notice until he, like, shuts the door. I don't even think he slammed the door. It was kind of just the door shut.
Yeah, that was a little too fake for me.
I'm going to be a little tired if, at least for these next few episodes, they always do something where he kind of gets overwhelmed and then needs to go away and then, like, take a breath and breathe and maybe possibly puke, maybe not, but he just needs to, like, I need to be away and I just need to check in with myself.
Maybe he should just, like, count to 10. You don't need to leave the room. It's a little dramatic, Tom, you know?
It's, I'm waiting for him. And I thought it might happen this episode. And I guess it does a little bit. He always has those little moments where he kind of steps up and shines. And he shows those people. He shows everyone around him that he has the potential to be a leader. But ultimately, it seems like every episode is like him being beaten down. And then he has to finally kind of rise up for that little moment at the end of each episode. I feel like only two episodes in and I'm seeing that kind of same kind of arc for each episode.
You know what?
That's not the case.
Do you know what I just realized?
What?
I'm looking at President Kirkman. And I am seeing a Frank Moran, a young...
Oh!
Is anybody out there else seeing this right now on the chat? We got the glasses. Mm. The hair is very similar, like...
You should get matching glasses for this show. This after show.
I'm literally just... Do you see it?
You know, I actually have a pair of glasses that are kind of similar to. I should wear those.
Dress like him. Wear like the zip up your sweatshirt. He did that, right. And then he wears. Yeah, you can look just like him and kind of look like this.
You're
like
wearing a similar sweatshirt in the picture. People, this unmistakable. Do you have inside knowledge of this show?
I do, guys, but I'm pretending to be dumb so as to not spoil it for you guys.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really appreciate it.
What is TV? I don't understand. What is happening? But as Tom is struggling with that, there's also people around the country that are struggling as well. And in fact, in Michigan, there is a lot of violence that's happening right there. A lot of the Muslims are being rounded up by the police department there. A lot of aggressive interrogation techniques.
That certainly was, throughout the episode, kind of the difference of what they would say. The difference, good comparison throughout, which they really tied in at the end between the president in Sakaar and the governor and the Muslims, of two different types of actions, where the governor in Sakaar is very much standoffish of like, we got to wait to see what the evidence brings in. We're not rushing to judgment. Versus the governor in Michigan and the Muslims of, you know what, we're going and acting right away. And they really tie it together at the end, and you almost look of like, it almost showed probably what would have happened had the president rushed in with Sakaar.
Well, I think that is encapsulated by Seth's line is there as the president and his envoy are heading over to the Capitol building, where Seth says, in a time of tragedy like this, people either love their fellow human or they fear them. So yes. They really seen the two sides. Yes.
Great line. But that was just interesting, just throughout the episode, what the kind of focus was. And two options for the same, type of reasoning.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like Governor Royce is definitely operating from a place of fear.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's just chill. Seriously.
I did like on his small little thing was that I did like the tie undone. And I noticed that with...
his tie was undone?
Where he didn't have the top button. And I pay attention to that even with... President Kirkman, of when he's going to the bomb site and he doesn't have, he's like, you want to wear a tie? And he's like, it's not an official event. Like that. Yeah. I wonder, why, even in the beginning when he was throwing on the suit, and it's like, at a certain point, you need to just, everyone, you need to wear what's comfortable, throw on a pair of jeans. Obviously, you need to be respected, but it's work time.
Yeah, but and that's the thing that drives me crazy, because I feel like some people like that easy thing for them to say is like, you didn't wear a tie to this. What kind of president is this? Like,
yes,
that's what
I
you're worried
it.
About?
Yeah.
That's what you're worried about? Come on.
I know.
I hate it.
I won't get too into politics, but even like this election, like so many people focus on like little things like fashion. I just don't think that should be the focus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then in the show.
Yeah. So. Lead the country well. I don't care how you dress.
Yeah. Wear
sweatpants.
Exactly.
I'm fine. If you're leading the country well, wear whatever you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, of course, if you want to have a president needs a cabinet, and they want him to name a chief of staff, and he's like, no, I'm not going to hold off. I'm going to hold off on that. I need a cabinet before you worry about a chief of staff. So he wants Aaron and Emily to team up on that. You're not liking that?
You don't like that?
I think he needs to make a pick. I think they're obviously doing that for the show to keep the drama going between Aaron and Emily, but I think a president would... in any situation, because I'm a realist, so I'm looking at the show, and I'll say this for the next several episodes of everything that I do with the show, I look at from a realist perspective of like, would this really happen? How would this really work? I think by this point he would nominate a chief of staff.
You would think that reorganizing a government is such a monumental task that you would want that chief of staff right next to you, because
yes.
you can't do everything yourself.
Yes.
You got to have somebody else making things happen for you.
So I feel like that's something that is almost too, like, forcing the plot.
So for you guys, I mean, you look at Aaron, of course, he knows the White House more. He's been involved with that. But you have Emily, who knows Tom better. Who do you think is a better chief of staff?
Emily. I don't trust Aaron. Aaron's a shady guy. I don't trust him. I don't trust his motives. I don't know. I would not trust him in that position. I think he needs to go do something else for a while.
Ben says co-chief of staff. Emily, or Ivan says Emily for chief of staff.
But isn't like the co-chief of staff, that's like when you like it's co-quarterbacks. Like, you can't have a co-quarterback.
Yeah.
You got to choose one. You got to, one's like a QB1. Sorry, you got to go with that. But I feel like with Aaron, I'm kind of curious because, I mean, he has these little clandestine meetings with the general, and I can't quite tell if he's really in league with the general or he's kind of playing both sides against the middle. He's kind of hedging his bets. Hedging. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I think he's trying to figure out what he wants to do, which is just so worrisome. Like, what is he going to pick? I mean, God forbid Tom does something he doesn't like, and he's like, well, I better go with the general. Like, this guy needs to be team president all the way. Needs to be on Tom's side. Should not be indecisive at this point.
Playing politics.
But, like, no, don't be chief of staff. Choose Emily. Emily's going to be team Tom the whole time. The whole time, I think.
No, that's very true. I feel like the longer Aaron is around Tom, though, I think Tom's going to have more of those moments where he kind of shows that true potential. And so that could sway Aaron, but
I don't know. I feel like they haven't had any of those moments where Aaron was, like, taken aback, like, ooh, this guy, he's a leader. I haven't seen that yet. I mean, it could be coming. We're on episode two, so
he obviously got to that position for a reason. We're just waiting to see what it is.
Now, we do have one little moment here in the episode that after all this, we have Cal Penn, good old Seth, heading home, and he does get profiled by the police out there
when
in D.C.
Heading into work.
Oh, when he's heading home after work. Wait. Isn't he heading home?
Seth, no, right?
It's right at the very beginning.
Yeah, he's walking with his backpack and the police pull him over. Is he heading home?
That's right at the beginning. He's heading to work.
He's going to work.
And then when he goes home, it happens again,
That set the tone for obviously everything. And you hear, oh, Dearborn, and you're like, what's in Dearborn? And Dearborn does have a very high Muslim population. And so I was like, oh, is that where they're going with this? And obviously that, you know, is the whole plot for the episode of kind of stereotyping and very prevalent even.
Oh, yeah.
To what is currently going on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's, you know, because it is, I mean, true to life. That's happening to people every single day. And certainly as a white man, I cannot, you know, speak to that at all. I have not had that happen to me. But I mean, I guess it's supposed to just really creep you out, just irritate you that still is happening.
Yeah.
Today. Yeah, I mean, I'm Persian and I have a lot of Persian family. And like one of the times that my family's racially profiled is when we're going through airports, typically. Because, like, Persian guys are always, they always are, like, the random chosen one to get, like, the pat down. And, like, I've experienced that in my family. But, like, this is a whole new extreme of that. That's not even, but, like, those little things. And then to see it completely blown up like this is hard.
And that's why I think even I was, not too much of a fan. Because I think that it's almost too over the top. And I know the point they were trying to make. I think to an extent, and this is going to sound really bad, but I want to be able to clarify myself. To a certain extent, some profiling isn't bad. In terms of, like, you can't act on it, but, like, keeping it, you know, an extra eye open or an extra ear open. Obviously, when you start to infringe upon that person's rights in doing so, not good. But being prevalent and knowledgeable about your surroundings.
But it shouldn't be racial profiling. It should be profiling in general. Because, regardless of race, there's weirdos out there. Yeah. And there's people that shouldn't have guns and kill people that they shouldn't. And, it, like, regardless of race.
Yeah.
But, like, you can't. That's the hard thing is because a lot of these people, even, like, serial killers, like, you don't know it's them. They're the average Joe. So that's why it's hard is because you really can't tell who someone is by, like, their race. You know, you don't know what they're capable of by...
No, and that's why it's a very small piece of information.
I figure anybody that's shady, regardless of their ethnicity, that's somebody you want to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It could be a white guy just acting like a loony.
Absolutely.
And that's why, I mean, that's why this episode, you see him just beating this 17-year-old.
Yeah, that
and you're
was...
like, okay,
how did
what?
That even...
And you're arresting people like that? No. It's like after in World War II, when they did that to the Japanese and they put them here... In the U.S., they put the Japanese in internment camps. And you're like, no, not at all. That's not what I'm advocating for, certainly. But, you know, keeping that maybe you're noticing something and just keeping that extra eye and ear open and maybe using it as a clue. Not necessarily a rush of judgment, but it's not good to be knowledgeable about your surroundings and who is surrounding you.
Yeah, I just feel like operating from a base of fear is just like, and that seems to be just the easy first inclination that people go to. Just when you operate from fear, I feel like that's when everything starts falling apart so quickly.
I agree.
Got to take a moment. Check in with everybody.
Research.
Yes.
Figure it out before you act upon it. Like, again, Chill.
Pull it. Be like Tom Kirkman, everybody. Just relax. Relax.
Yeah, relax. Leave the room. Take a breather. Yes. Come back to it.
Now, good old Tom Kirkman, he is a designated survivor. But we find out this episode, guess what? He's not the only designated survivor.
Two.
Look at that. Everything's yes. better in pairs. There you go. So we find Kimball Hook Stratton. She was the Republican candidate to be the designated survivor, which I didn't even know that the party would set up, each party would set up their own designated survivor.
I know.
Or I don't know if there's a Democratic one. I assume not, because they would have been introduced this episode here. So, or independent, whatever Tom's side of it is. So I guess we have a Republican. But curious, I don't yeah. know in terms of the line of succession. Is Tom, because he's Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, does that make him higher up on the totem pole than a congressperson?
Yes. He's anytime you're in the cabinet, you're, goes down with the cabinet, I think. So it's president, this is the top of my head, president, vice president, then Speaker of the House, then number four, I believe, is president pro temp of the Senate. No, president pro temp of the Senate is the vice president. So then it goes, I think Secretary of State is number four. Secretary of Defense, I think, is number five. And then it goes down the list of the secretaries.
I was hoping you were going to get down, because he said he's 11 on the depth chart. Hoping you were going to get me all the way there.
But after, you have the president, you have the vice president, you have the Speaker of the House. After that goes, starts with the secretaries, I believe, because the leader of the Senate is the vice president.
And then
president pro tem.
After you get through the cabinet, that's when you get to the Congress. If any of those were people have to get around. So, okay, with that going, so good old Tom Kirkman, that's why he is your president, people. That's what happens there. But they have a nice little chat. So, originally you may think they may be contentious right there, but as she kind of diffuses the situation, say, we're not Republican, Democrat, Independent, we're all just Americans today. Mm-hmm. So I'm here to support you. In fact, I woke up this morning, I prayed, I cried. Last time I did that was 9/11. So
they really are making a lot of 9/11 comparisons.
Yeah,
how could you not?
Which, how could you not?
True.
But at least for right now, there's no reason to think anything. Interesting to see what Kimball's objective is.
Yeah, I don't know if I necessarily trust her. I think it's really easy to talk the talk, especially if you're in politics. So I'm not exactly sure how I feel about her. I also think that the scene they place at the end was there for a reason. I just don't know what that reason is.
Okay, here we go. President, ooh. Vice President, Speaker of the House, President pro temp of the Senate, who is different than the Vice President. So I had it right. I just thought it was the wrong person. Then Secretary of State. Oh, Secretary of Treasury. Then Defense. Then the Attorney General. Then Secretary of the Interior of Agriculture, Commerce, Labor, Health and Human Services. Housing and Urban Development. They say he's 13.
Ooh, ouch. Okay.
Secretary of Transportation, of Energy, of Education, of Veterans Affairs, and lastly of Homeland Security.
Oh, interesting. I would have thought Homeland Security is that low.
But who do they say Sally Jewell was born in the UK and thus not eligible to become president? So that must. Oh, so she is the current Secretary of the Interior, but she was not born in the U.S. So. Can't become president. Ooh. So there gets rid of number eight.
Well, I guess she knows that she would never be picked to be the designated survivor. She always gets to go to those big State of the Union addresses. So she's set.
We'll get to that point. We might as well jump in. So we're talking about Congresswoman coming in. We meet her. Good person, bad person? What do you think? Because a lot of people in the live chat, and this is, I want to talk about this because a lot of people are talking about this. Do you think she will try to become president? Do you think she will try to advance over Kirkman?
It's tough to say, because there's reasons that you could go either way with the story. I mean, you could make her somebody that has her own agenda and is trying to make an end run around Tom to try to sabotage him to be that person. Or she could be somebody that appears to be against him but is really working in his best interests. I don't know which ways the writers might decide is a better story.
I know, because at this point, if she's also against him and trying to take over, how many people? It's Tom against the world.
Yeah.
So I think that would be a little bit of overkill if they also have her trying to take his position. But again, I don't know, because where does she fit into the storyline? I get she's the other designated survivor, but how is she going to tie into the actual
plot of this show? Her play?
Yeah.
What is her reasoning for thinking that she should be president? Obviously, with the general, he's like, I'm in the military, and this is a military situation that we're being attacked. This is why I think I should lead. But her, I don't really see her angle, just a random...
Well, yeah, she's been an elected official, though. She's been elected to office, so for sure she's feeling like she has more government experience.
Yeah. Here's why I say that she is not, and I rewatched at the very end to see when she was Googling his name. And I think her thought process throughout the episode was... You know, I want to learn something about this guy, like everyone else who had no idea who he was. And she saw how he acted, and then she Googled his name to try to be like, I want to learn more about him. And had the first article that came up basically just said he took over. And the second one, the headline was that he has a plan to advance the department. And I think that showed to her... that he has a plan, that he is a planning man, and that things will be okay. Because he's not just someone who just sits on his hands, housing an urban authority. Okay, yeah, I'm just literally buying my time. It's a great title. No, he is someone who develops plans, who thinks things through, and is a good leader.
No, I'd go with that. I mean, I was thinking much the same thing. So but you said it so much more eloquently than I could have.
I was developing it as I was saying it. So
it
sounded
good. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it.
But a lot of people on here are saying that they think she will take over. And people are saying, oh, could she be the VP? We don't have a cabinet. We don't have a chief of staff yet. So who knows what the VP would be?
No, that's it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess you haven't thought about it. Yeah, he does need a vice president. You keep forgetting, like, yeah, that's a whole cabinet that he's got to fill inside there. Because, I mean...
lots to do.
He can't be in that whole cabinet room by himself, just, you know, massaging his president chair. Let me touch
Why
that.
Why not?
I need to be alone.
That could be his room to go to when he wants to be alone. Perfect. We solved it. You're welcome.
Look at that. And then, of course, we have, as always, our Scott Watch. We have Hannah taking a look at a picture of her and Scott before she heads back in to get the debrief. Hannah. Yep. Always, are we going to find Scott? I know Michael was very, very much thought that he
Michael,
kind
do
of...
do you think we'll find him?
Here's the thing.
Okay.
Everyone out there, tweet me, at Michael Klaus TV, comment on the live chat. Did they find Scott at the very end?
No.
I think that there's... similarities.
Not Scott.
Middle-aged white man.
No, his
Michael
hair was
really
way too long.
Scott.
It was way too long in the front, hanging down.
Yeah, that was. He was so much younger than Scott.
And Hannah argues for him. And
no, she.
She argues that he needs to testify because I think she wants him in unison to prove that it's not Sakaar.
I just think she wants to find out who did it. So yeah. I think she's going to be like, maybe he saw something, not because it's Scott. I think the first thing she say to Scott is like, oh my gosh, you're okay.
Let's
go be together and not worry about all this other stuff now.
I'm worried about Scott.
I think Scott's gone.
Yeah. Please be gone, Scott.
I think it's Scott. Wow. Can we make it confirmed, though? Because I think Michael needs some closure.
Yeah, otherwise, there's no closure.
It's so possible. Or Scott did it.
Ben doesn't think it's Scott.
No, it's not. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Ben. You're a smart man.
Man,
there you go.
I feel like Kirkman getting ganged up on by everyone.
Well, one person that's not ganging up on him is his wife, Alex. And we get a little moment there where...
Good transition.
There you go. He and Alex are talking there in the Oval Office. And, of course, thank goodness we have to check in. How are the kids? How are Penny and Leo? Oof. All right.
Roughing it.
Are you guys disappointed that we didn't see Leo's drug money this episode with, say, tease last episode?
Yeah. I mean, although in the last week's tease, they teased some stuff that is going to be shown in next week's episode, it looks like. Like with the reporter really laying into him and stuff. So I feel like that was a tease for this, a little bit of the season. But, we'll get right into it with Leo. I'm
over him.
I'm absolutely over Leo. Please get rid of this guy.
Also, like, okay, you bratty little teenager. It's not you taking over to be a parent. It's called babysitting.
Ugh.
It's called, if someone hired me to babysit or to have me watch my little, I don't have a little sister, but this is an example.
Yes.
My little sister. And they're like, hey, the one thing where we want to make sure is that she doesn't watch TV. The whole time I'm babysitting her, my one job is to make her not watch TV. Like, that's babysitting. It's not parenting, Leo.
Ugh.
It's the worst.
What she said.
I agree with you, Renee. This character is irritating. I can't stand this.
Get him
kid.
As a guest.
Please, yeah, man, that's I'm sure the actor is delightful. Your character is annoying as heck. I will say that.
It's like it's like those memes that say you had one job.
Oh my
Don't
god.
Don't let her watch TV.
This character.
Boom. Call from your drug dealer. Things change.
And so basically, Tom, Alex, and some of the members of his kind of quasi staff are going to head over to the ruins of the Capitol building so he can walk around. And Alex tells Leo, it's like, hey, just make sure that Penny doesn't watch TV at all. That's all you got to do. And of course, Leo gets a phone call, walks away. Penny just immediately turns on the channel
the
and just
kid's
sits down.
Instinct, like, got to get
also,
technology.
Can we throw this out there, though? How are you not going to have a Secret Service person watching her?
Yeah.
It's not like you're still the Secretary of House and Urban Development and you're sitting at home alone. You have people at your disposal. Hey,
it's true.
Someone way more trustworthy than Leo. Watch the
anyone
girl.
Else in this house. Anyone raise else. Your hand if you're available. Also, like, who even calls each other anymore? Like, wouldn't they text for the drug deals? Is that proof? Is that why they don't do it?
I don't know. Like, Michael knows.
Michael, what typically
from my experience, smoke signals.
Oh,
work
that's good.
Best.
Oh yeah, look at that. Going old school.
Pun intended. Nice.
That's right. But when, of course, Penny does watch everything that happens down with Tom at the Capitol building, then Alex gets back to the White House and lays into Leo. It says, you know, they have their argument, as Renee was saying, about the parenting. That Leo's response, Alex says,
that's
"You got a
job."
Grow up. Oh my god! It's like, I need you to grow up faster. Can you do that? Can you be more responsible? And it's like, well, I guess we'll see. Like,
yeah,
go
well,
away.
You're the
well, we're
worst
all...
human.
Well, we're all doing jobs that we didn't have yesterday or something.
Yes,
like that. Great line. Just,
this I do not see what. Any benefit that this Alex character has to the show or Leo?
Oh, but I'm Alex, like,
Alex
is fantastic.
Leo, please just send Leo away. Just
and, like,
send
Penny,
Leo away.
Like if they'd kill off one character, I just prefer Leo to be gone. Bring back Scott and get rid of Leo.
Can we trade Scott for Leo?
Is that possible?
You know, and it's like I don't want Leo to die because if he does, then everybody's going to be like dwelling on that. Just send Leo away.
Yeah, like boarding school.
Yes.
That's so nice. Send him to boarding school.
That's
far,
great.
Far away.
Easy peasy.
And, yeah. And then, you know, and we just know that he's always alive and everything's well with him, but we never
but we
mention
never
him.
We never see him.
And we never talk
him.
About him.
Yeah.
Yes.
We have the entire live chat against Leo, by the way.
Yes.
Oh, thank
yes,
you, live chat.
Leo haters.
Oh, this is, he's the pits.
Ivan, kill off Leo.
Yes.
Ben, Leo is the mastermind.
Leo's the man behind
maybe
it all.
Maybe a little too much.
Now, speaking of masterminds, the general thinks that they have the masterminds behind this plot. Al-Sakhar, they're 75% sure, given the bomb residue and everything, that is very similar to what Al-Sakhar would use.
Al-Sakhar is a North African branch of Al-Qaeda.
Yes.
Another bad word in there, you know, you're thinking Al-Qaeda, ooh, not good.
There you go. And the general, trying to at least be a little bit more political, instead of being like, you know, just the angry yelling guy that he was last episode, says, hey, I respect what you did with Iran last episode.
Trying
last
to get
week.
On his good side.
Yes.
Yeah, he's manipulative. I
don't
trust
that. That was such like, you did such a great thing, but just know if I'm coming to you now that, I mean, we really need to do this. Okay. And Tom, to his credit, says, I don't want 75%. I want 100%.
Give me 100.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
Which, I felt like he got a lot of people around the room where he said, like, you know, don't you think I lost people? I want to get every one of these people that did it. I want to rip them to shreds.
How much more?
25%.
Blank, blank.
So I feel like, you know, in a situation where the government, I'm sure, you know, especially the general, he just wants to just start, you know, just attack somebody.
To a certain extent, I can't blame him because he's used to action. That's what he does. That's what generals do. They act. So for him to sit on his hands, he is constantly thinking that the enemy, whoever it may be, is gaining a leg up.
Yeah, but the thing that's
and that is their mindset. So I'm not completely hating on him, but
yeah, but I feel like I want to think like in this day and age that, given all the history that we've ever had, where we have jumped the gun on assigning blame to people and organizations and whatnot, and then regret it or find out later that that's not the case. Like you would think in this day and age, take a moment. Take a moment. I know this is a catastrophic
Take
event. Take a Tom moment.
Ivan, Kirkman went Jack Bauer.
He did. Yes.
He did.
Now, Hannah wants the deputy director to also share her thoughts about it as well, because he's going to come to the Capitol, get a little debriefing from deputy director, And it seems like the deputy director is a little reticent to share Hannah's theories that it's actually somebody trying to cast blame on these other organizations.
I think he didn't because she didn't have proof of any sort. It was kind of a, like a vague theory that didn't have enough to really pitch to anyone. You know, like, it's kind of like, well, we think because of all of these other factors that it could possibly be someone else that we have no idea who that could be. And we know of you have this one lead, but we're trying to say that can't be it, but we don't have another lead. You know, like, it wasn't enough. I do agree with her for sure. That is something to pay attention to, and you don't want to go after someone who probably didn't do it. But at the same time, I do understand why Jason Atwood did not tell the president.
I wonder too if Atwood is thinking that he doesn't want to overwhelm the president because of the situation that he's in.
And so he gets overwhelmed very easily.
Yeah, you don't want to give the president more information knowing that he's not used to any of this. So don't throw, you know, everything at him at once. Throw what you know and let him make the decision.
Because at the ruins of the Capitol building, there's not really another room to retreat into, either puke or just kind of catch your breath. There's not a real place to hide for that. But as he heads out there, we find out, it's kind of cool. It's like, you know, you have two choices if you leave the White House. It's either you go in the front with 13-car security there and a bulletproof vest on, or you can go out the back with a baseball cap on.
Coincidentally, I was listening to Ryan Seacrest in the morning 2 days ago, I believe, and the president was on. Yeah, it was the day after the debate, so it would have been, it would have been yesterday morning. And he was talking, and they said, what is one thing that you will most enjoy about leaving the White House? And he said, going for a walk.
Oh,
going for a walk.
Obama.
Yeah, but then, I mean, it's not going to be as easy as he makes it sound easier. It's probably going to be with a little less intensity, but he's still always going to have Secret Service around him.
Oh, you are. But he said just on like a Saturday to be able to just go for a walk.
Yes.
And he's like, I'll say I want to go for a walk. And it's like, all right, 2 hours of Secret Service getting together.
Yeah. Have you guys seen the episode with Obama doing, I think it's, comedians in the car getting coffee?
Yeah.
And, like, he couldn't really go anywhere. I mean, probably was pumped up a little bit for, like, television purposes. But, like, what? It's funny. They can't go anywhere,
they just
really
had to stay within the confines of the White House.
Yeah, they had to, like, stay in the limo, the whole shebang. But, yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun episode. You have no private life. Everything is public.
No, very true.
And I would imagine that gets old.
Oh, absolutely. Especially, after 8 years of that, just want to have a little bit of, like, it's never going to be anonymity, but you want to feel like at least you can get a little bit of your private life back.
This weekend, I'm going camping, off the grid, getting away. President can't do that.
If you were the president, Michael, you would not be able to do that.
I would sneak away.
Good example.
All right. But you also find out what's really cool is you get to find out what your Secret Service name is. I mean, of course, the president's called Phoenix, but he wants to know, hey, back before I was just a HUD guy, what was my Secret Service name?
I don't think he would actually have a name as that secretary. Glasses? I think that was kind of made up.
Oh.
I don't think he was high enough to have a name.
Oh, well, that's very disparaging.
That's a little rude.
Yeah.
Why? His name was Kirkman.
No,
he has an actual name.
No, you got to come up with a cool name. Yeah. It's got to be Glasses.
Code names.
Yeah. All right.
We
real
all have
quick.
Code names for
yeah,
each other.
Yeah. What's your code name? Secret Service code name. What do you think it would be?
For me?
Yeah.
Oh, that's you guys.
All right, I'll go with Abs. That's
Abs.
It. Abs.
Cool.
Yep.
Why is that, Frank?
Come on. Hey, stalk this guy on social media, man. Look at that. He's rocking that.
Why.
He's rocking that six pack. He's not afraid to show it.
Yours would be Kirkman.
I actually got the last time I went camping. Anytime that
you just
we
go camping
go,
a lot.
last time it was like 3 months ago or something like that. where we went was a hot springs, and everyone gets a nickname in our group. Like you get a camping nickname that stays with you, and it was my first time with the group. And I did not have a nickname yet. And by the end, I got the nickname Daredevil because I jumped off a 60-foot cliff. Into a very unsafe body of water. And so I got the nickname Daredevil. And so maybe that can be mine.
That's Abs. We already made it. You said it's up to us. So
well, you
abs.
Guys didn't give me one, but it's fine. It's okay. It's whatever. I don't want to be a part of it anyway, so like it's cool.
Michael, please.
What?
A name for Renee. We've all picked one. Renee picked one for me. I picked one for you. Please.
Cats?
Cats.
Did you say you have cats, right? Isn't that your...
Oh, wow.
Cats?
Yeah, Michael. I'll be cats.
Cats!
As cats is on the move.
Don't you have cats, right? You have cats, right? Isn't that your blog? What's your blog again? What's your blog again? One more time. You're laughing.
Catslipstickla.com.
Yes! Yes! I knew it!
Almost comes up like, you have cats, right? Yeah, that's right. Cats?
Cats! We got, people are saying Klaus the Camper or V-neck Klaus.
V-neck Klaus.
I like a good V.
I'm camping.
What? Yeah, I'm camping. Yeah, that's right.
Michael loves camping.
Do you guys like camping? we do those see that while Tom's at the Capitol building, he, after he gets a debriefing there from Deputy Director Atwood, he comes out and realizes that, hey, maybe me wearing the bulletproof vest is not the best way to show that confidence about the state of our country right now. So he takes off the bulletproof vest. I feel like he got a little respect for Mike in that moment. I feel like Mike was like, all right, yeah, this guy's willing to step up a little bit.
Yeah.
But then we get to a part that I don't really enjoy. He gets out. He gets like the little the public air. I don't want to say air horn, but what is it?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Bullhorn.
Bullhorn. That's what it is. Thank you, Michael.
Recreating the George Bush moment after 9/11.
There you go. Yes,
another tie-in to 9/11.
So as he's talking there, of course, they've got the press there as well. But everybody starts seeing on their phones popping up video of this young teen being beaten by the police over in Dearborn, Michigan. And then it just takes a turn for the worse there.
Okay, when you're watching a movie, a speech, a play, your phones are off. Send me videos. Even if they're not off, you get videos and you start watching them.
If you're in a news situation, you guaranteed are paying attention to that situation.
Really? I was like, guys, put away your phones.
I was a television reporter for 4+ years.
So
you're interviewing someone and you'll have an alert on your phone. And I was about to say, that is totally this day and age. That there would be a CNN breaking news tweet with live video and someone would click on it and they would automatically start watching it in the press conference to be able to ask the president about it before he's even seen it.
Oh, but, I thought that was not believable, but that's good to know that is actually a real thing.
That was all right. But like the thing that was just so frustrating and irritating about that moment is that they've seen the president walking all around the ruins of the Capitol, talking to people, addressing them. So he's probably getting this debriefing from the FBI Deputy Director Atwood. So he's probably been there, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever. And then all of a sudden he's doing this speech. And he's been talking for a few minutes, and then all this video starts coming in. And they're asking him right away, what's the deal? Like, he hasn't even seen this video yet. How do you expect him to even comment if something he doesn't even know that's happened yet?
You want to be the first one to break the news.
So irritating.
You want to tweet it out. Tweet out.
And
president says.
You want to make him look bad, probably. Too at the same time, because he doesn't know any of this, and then catching him off guard, that's already a story right there. President doesn't know what to do about this. It's a news story in itself.
And the other part I didn't like is I'm tired of the cliche of there's somebody in the back of a pack and they're moving towards president, and they've always got their hand in the pocket. Like, just keep your hand out.
Their phone there.
Yeah, and it's going to wait till the very last second to pull out their phone. Come on, that seemed irritating.
Hey, we saw from our other presidential show that we do together, Frank.
You guys do another show
that
together?
That the president got shot by someone who had a gun here.
Yes, but I'm just saying, that's just so...
You can't tell me you're sick of that.
I am sick of that. That cliche of somebody always... That is too much of a trope to have, like, somebody's got their hand in their pocket.
Frank Underwood got an assassination attempt.
I just think no one carries their phone there anymore.
Yeah, do you carry?
Do you care? I mean, I don't. I have.
I do
a purse,
not carry it in like my upper jacket pocket. I mean, it's always in my pocket.
You carry back pocket or front pocket. You guys have big pockets for pants. We have like tiny girl pockets.
I would never back pocket my cell phone. I feel like I just sit on it and crack it or something.
Really?
A gun? Yeah.
Would you have it in a?
No, my cell phone. My cell phone. Not my.
Yeah, I'm a front pocket cell phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, not like a jacket pocket here. Like, there's also pockets here. Like, there's so many options.
Yeah, even if I had a jacket on, I would never put a cell phone in a jacket pocket.
Yeah, loser.
Yeah, come on, let's get it together, you weirdos. So Tom gets rushed off, and of course that looks all bad. As of course the news stories are saying later on in the episode, like, President Kirkman's failure of appearance over there at the Capitol building. Like, no, all right, sounds good, guys. Way to just hate on the poor man.
I know. Poor guy. Also, when he was in the car, can I just say, he was not pronouncing words, and when he was talking like this.
Yeah, there was. I thought it's like
he said, "What did he say? How can anybody be ready for this?" Just like that, like his mouth barely opened. I'm like, "Speak up! Open your mouth when you're talking."
I was thinking that same thing. I was like, "Did he have a stroke? What happened? When Why is he
slurring?" It was not like his mouth was just like. Like that.
He's not enunciating at all. Enunciate. What's going on? But when they get back to the White House, of course, they hear about the child being beaten. And Alex gets that info from Seth that he's 17. And then this is the lamest line. Tommy's the same age as Leo.
Like, oh, does that matter? I know.
Does that matter? I could be any age. What does that matter?
Are we angry because it's Leo? Or are we? Well, we're angry for both reasons. Because it's
the realist in me is coming out in that it's a line for script.
Oh, it was that line just killed me. Like, great.
Same age as Leo. Leo.
Alex, please, have a
Maybe
seat.
Maybe it should have been Leo. I'm sorry, I take that
Wow.
back. And then we find out how ineffective the Attorney General, people from the Attorney General's office are. They basically can just not really agree on any sort of advice to give Tom on how he should proceed with the Michigan situation. Does he do an executive executive order? Does he try to just do a presidential proclamation that really has just an empty gesture? Or does he try to declare martial law? Nobody can really decide which is the best course of action for him to take.
Great.
Yeah, so thanks, awesome. Guys. That was a really effective
Making
scene.
Making it real easy.
Yeah. And then we have the general talking to Aaron, trying to like, hey, what's the deal? What's going on here? And then we find out the moment I called my shot for this episode when all of a sudden Tom gets a call and I knew exactly what this call was going to be. And we find out that young boy in Michigan was killed due to the internal injuries he suffered from the beating.
You called
the police.
That. That's awful. Literally like a few seconds before said, I know what this call is.
Yeah.
Before we got any info.
Oh, guys.
Didn't even know what it was regarding.
Of course, the writing's on the wall. Look at that. Oh, God, that's camping hands just crushing me. Good Lord. That's spending all those time outdoors.
Loves camping. Did you guys know that? Michael loves to go camping.
Loves the camper in my V-necks.
luckily, though, our girl Stratton, she has a connection with Royce. They served on a committee together, so she's finally able to get him on the line, something that Kirkman has been unable to. Other than their very first conversation since then, hasn't been able to get on the phone since.
It did not go well.
No, because he doesn't recognize Kirkman's authority. Doesn't, you know, just because it was a constitutional act doesn't mean that you're my president. And I'm the one that's, you know, I'm the highest authority in the land here in Michigan. And I don't answer to you. I'm like, oh, all right, sure.
Okay, well, get with it. Because now he's the president.
Yes.
He's not Mr. Kirkman, he's Mr. President.
And then we get Kirkman's moment. Every episode we get Kirkman's moment here, and this was his, where he kind of he plays a little blind man, or not blind man's bluff, but he bluffs Royce.
He bluffs
him. Should go gambling for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So and I feel like Aaron really liked it. Stratton.
He proves himself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, that was good.
Yeah, he's like, all right, this guy could be the president.
I'm just wondering again that it's what I talked about at the beginning of. They started the episode again on a low. And so last week was low to high. This week start off on a low again, and we left it on a high. And I'm just wondering if that's what they're trying. I mean, when does that end? Are we going to continue? What's the beginning of next week going to look like? You know,
just given what we I guess we'll get to that in a second. How that's going to be. But lastly, there we get Tom talks to Seth a little bit about the profiling that he got from the police earlier, and. Says, hey, if you need somebody from Secret Service to take you home, you can do that. And Seth says, no, I'm going to walk through. And he goes through a little memorial shrine that's being built. The police officer that was there comes by again. And
you knew that was coming.
They have that little moment. Yeah, we all lost people in here. So.
It's interesting to see the dynamics between the main characters of their learning who they can trust. Because there's so many people who haven't worked together and don't know each other. Directors and officials and the president working with all these new people who are on his staff, and they're all learning who they can trust.
Yeah.
And I'm still waiting for the moment. I feel like we got to get Hannah Wells and President Kirkman in the same room together. I feel like that's the one like missing piece that we're seeing there. Cause I feel like she has some thoughts that Kirkman needs to hear. And so
let's make a prediction. Will it happen next week?
Well, before we get to that, all we do is we end the episode where there is a survivor found, and that'll lead us into some hot prediction talk.
Did we get AfterBuzz TV predictions.
I think we already know who that person is. It's Scott.
We know that.
Scott lives.
I believe Ben in the chat said that it is not Scott. I trust Ben. Yep.
Yeah.
There you go, Renee. Yes.
Yep. Michael goes camping too much.
So given what we saw there, there's a survivor in play. Hannah's got some stuff she has to tell the president. We saw the little teasers for next week. Renee, what do you think?
Okay, I still think it's an insider job for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm sticking with that. I also think that, I don't know if it's going to be one episode or two episodes, but Hannah is going to somehow get a meeting with Kirkman that's not approved and then tell him her thoughts. Once she has more information, I think this survivor is going to give her some insight, even if other people don't listen, because they'll be like, well, he just survived a traumatic injury, he doesn't know what he's saying, blah, blah, blah. She's going to like take what he says seriously, get some more information, then somehow get to the president to give her thoughts. And I think out of all the people on the show, Tom would be the one to listen and actually take in what she's saying.
I feel that that's the moment, though. Like, as soon as she has that meeting, it gets back to Atwood. Atwood wants to get rid of her. Then, like, you can't go around me. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. And then Kirkman comes back, like, this is the only woman I can trust. Yep. Atwood, you're gone. Here comes Hannah. She's in charge now.
She's cool. And Scott's so dead. Anyways, that's the conclusion of my predictions.
I just tweeted out to see if I was the only one who thinks Scott
is alive.
Oh, well, we've got plenty of time to see the results of that tweet. all right, Abs, what do you think?
Still think it's an inside job. I think it could it be an inside job and have connection to Sakaar? In which case the general comes back and says, "See, I told you so." Adds another dynamic to it. Because at some point I feel the general has to be right, because that will give him more leverage of what he thinks he can do. He can use the I told you so card, because he is someone who would use the I told you so card.
Yeah, he would.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like somebody in that position couldn't get there by being a complete idiot. So he's got to be right about things. Yeah.
You'd hope not.
Yeah.
No, that's true. A couple people were pitching, is the survivor... Yeah, one of the people who was in on it.
You know, what are the... I'm going to be curious about the survivor, though, the interview with him, because what are the odds are somebody that survived that but then also happens to have any sort of relevant information to be able to offer? You have to be just in that right spot to see somebody do something. And there's so many places to be in that building. It's a huge building.
Yeah.
So...
Man, a lot of people are thinking that the survivor is part of the bombing.
Man, that's a dangerous gambit to take as a survivor. Like, yeah. I'm part of it, but I'm going to risk it, guys. I'm going to stay in the building to make sure.
I'm going to survive. I'm going to stay just far enough where I get injured enough, but I still make it. Hopefully not.
There's only one way to find out.
Watch next week's episode.
I'll predict that Leo goes into just a really gentle coma. And it's a really like pleasant coma.
Too much pot or
coke where it's just like, in fact, the doctors say, hey, he's really comfortable. He's well cared for. You don't even need to come and visit him. Just know that he's safe. That's my prediction there for Leo.
Great prediction.
Thanks, everybody. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Designated Survivor After Show. For Cats, Abs, and Kirkman, you can like us on Facebook, give us 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe to the YouTube channel, hop in the chat. We love having you on there today.
It's been great.
Yes, thank you for telling Michael that he's wrong about Scott surviving,
thank
Ben.
You.
We appreciate that. Folks, if you want to continue the conversation even after the show's over, Renee, where can they find you?
Hey guys, you can find me on Instagram and on Twitter at Renee Ariel, and check out my blog, catslipstickla.com.
Cats! I'm Michael Klaus. You can follow me on Twitter at Michael Klaus TV, on Instagram at The Only MC. Interact with me. I'm very interested. I think Scott's alive.
Oh, my goodness.
I know I'm not the only one.
He's got to be the only one. He's got to be. You can follow me on Twitter at Happy Go Jackie. And we'll see you next week here for another hot episode of the Designated Survivor After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. See you.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.